This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass, and my guys, my fellas, my brothers from the MGO blogosphere. They joined us on a Tuesday, accommodated us, taking time out of their busy days. Because he said, fellas, we can't go a whole week without, and especially Ohio State week, can't go without the MGO blog roundtable. So they said, hey, we'll come on Tuesday. Joining us as they normally do on Thursday, Brian Cook, he of MGO blog fame. Brian, how are you?
Hello. Rich Reddy is about to get some major pushback because he didn't know Craig Ross was going to be around to respond to his scurrilous accusations.
Right. And then, of course, Seth Fisher, who was listening as well, and you have a correction to one of the claims made by Rich Reddy. Is that right?
There are quite a few corrections. If you wanted to make this whole, like, let's correct Rich Reddy segment, we can do that. But we've been called out for being too negative on our podcast, so we wanted to come here on the radio and show you that we are pure Michigan fans. I've got a shot of COVID in one shoulder. I got a shot of flu in my other shoulder. And I've been watching Maryland try to play defense all the last 2 days. And I am still here. And I'm ready to show you my Michigan fandom. It's on my heart and on my sleeve, and I'm ready to go.
And then Craig Ross.
Yeah.
I think Seth said he's 3,000 years old.
Yeah.
So apparently Rich Reddy shortchanged you, took some of your years away. But I just say you're wise. You're well-read.
No.
You're my guy. How are you doing this morning?
Well-read, I'll give him, yes. He reads a lot of books, but wise, I cannot accept that.
Craig Ross told he remembers the bubonic plague.
Well, I will admit to this. I love Rich Reddy. I love his segment. He's wonderful. He mentioned surprise today, Paul Cromer, who few may remember, but he was an All-American running back at Michigan in the late 30s, and then in his senior year, Tom Harmon showed up. And so he became a blocking back for Tom Harmon. I knew Paul Cromer. I talked to him many times. So I am pretty old when I've talked to a guy who he grew up where I grew up in Lorain, Ohio, and was a sailmaker in Lorain. And I did not know he was a Michigan football player. I certainly didn't know he was an All-American football player because he was a little scrawny guy. But a really interesting man. One thing that Rich, had wrong, at least according to Dennis Franklin, is the year that the Big Ten ADs voted 6-4 to send Ohio State to the Rose Bowl, and Michigan would have killed that USC team, which was no good anyway. Mm-hmm. The quarterback would have been Larry Sipa, who actually was a good quarterback and played more than several years in the NFL. So the backup to Dennis Franklin was an NFL quarterback, and Franklin always claimed he could throw the ball by Christmas Day and was well ready to play in the Rose Bowl.
So. Yeah, robbed they were.
Yeah, they were robbed.
I can't believe they decided it based off of whether or not Michigan's quarterback could throw the ball. Do you know the first thing about those teams?
Yeah,
oh, Franklin. No, Michigan can't throw.
Yeah, Franklin didn't throw the
ball. Throw.
Right, didn't throw it all that much anyway. He was a competent thrower, but he was great at running the triple option. and a wonderful and really terrific football player. And I remember Franklin, when he came to Michigan, he said, someone asked him, because I believe he was from Massillon, Ohio, and they had a big stadium, high school stadium there that seats, I don't know, 25 or 30,000. And they had asked him about playing in front of big crowds. And he goes, well, I don't know. We never have more than 30,000 here. So,
All right, fellas, let's get into it. Let's broad brush this Maryland game so we can talk about the Buckeyes. Just your biggest takeaways, starting with you, Brian, from a team that was clearly overmatched. Maryland isn't very good. Michigan wind up dispatching of them quite easily.
Yeah. So
in the grand scheme of things. So what did you take away from that contest?
I wrote about this in the game column. I can't remember anything that happened in Maryland games because they're so immediately forgettable. I think that something cool happened on special teams, but that's all I remember.
Seth?
The most encouraging thing I found while watching the tape is that Michigan was doing a lot of things that don't make any sense against Maryland, but make a lot of sense to put on the on film before Ohio State. So I'm a little less concerned than I was before that Michigan overprepared for the Maryland Terrapins and were not focused on the real game at hand. So good to see that they were looking past them.
Craig Ross?
A couple things. One, I watched the MSU game before the Michigan game, and we were all rooting for a 95-10 final, which we thought would have been completely appropriate, given the nature of what's on the table for their coach. But it was slightly disappointing when Ohio State pulled out. Pulled in their horns early in the third quarter. But the thing about the Michigan game that I was really happy was Michigan deciding to throw the ball to Donovan Edwards. I mean, we've been clamoring on this show for probably 3 years for Michigan to be throwing the ball to the running backs, particularly if you're not going to run read options, because it does tend to then give the defense a little more to deal with. And this week, not only did they throw it to the running backs, they threw it to Edwards. I think it was 10 or 11 receptions for 170 yards, which is the most ever in the history of Michigan football. And they did it in different ways. They did it with wheel routes and they did it after play action, and they did it different ways. So it was, I don't know if that, at least it's something Ohio State has to look at the tapes, regardless of whether, whether it's used.
It was not something Maryland looked at before the tapes. Their responses are so bad.
if Blake Corum were going to play, who was obviously certainly early in the season, one of Michigan's leading pass catchers, if Blake Corum was going to play, you prepare for that. You aren't preparing for that with Hassan Haskins, right? That's not really his game. So I agree with you. You watch what, and as good as Blake is really, really good. Donovan could have been a five-star receiver. And I think we saw that on Saturday. So it's an element that if you're Ohio State, you got to pay attention to. But I want to look at I want to look at the quarterbacks for a minute. So I think that was Cade McNamara's best game. I think it was a better game than at Michigan State. I'm curious what you guys think. Is that an overstatement in your estimation? What do you think of Cade McNamara's performance in that game?
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't getting the kind of pressure in this game that he was against Michigan State. So I thought he made a lot of plays under duress against Michigan State, like the Andrew Anthony throw. There was one to all that, to me, I thought were more difficult than the kind of throws he was hitting. He also had a couple of pretty nice catches from his receivers in this game. But the ability to identify that the wheel was going to be open for Edwards and then lay it in there so that he didn't have to break stride at all was great. So like he had his moments here. Just got to stop throwing it off his offensive lineman's helmets.
Yeah. I just think, as unfortunate as it is to say, there are certain things that you're going to have to live with. You aren't going to correct his arm slot, right? I mean, we can complain, we can just hope for the best. Hope he at least stops with the helmet shots, but he's going to have batted balls. There was another instance in this game where, you had a dig up, and he's just not going to throw that against zone. But the thing that he very often, but the things that he did do, that wheel route to me was outstanding because that he missed that very play against Wisconsin. You guys remember, right?
Yes.
Very play, to the same guy, to Donovan Edwards versus Wisconsin. And here he is. He hit it in this game. The Andre Anthony play, yeah, it was a great catch by Andre Anthony, but he had pressure coming in his face. I it was good to see him not leave. He left fewer plays on the field. I think that's what stood out to me. He hit more guys. He left fewer plays on the field.
I mean, my analysis was almost the exact opposite of that. Like he had a lot of dead on shots in this one, but McNamara, he was hitting his first read a lot because Merrill Lynn was leaving his first read open a lot. And then you'd see that, and then all of a sudden, like, Schoonmaker on, like, his third read was, like, breaking super wide open for a touchdown, and, like, Maryland was just bad. So, like, the difference, Michigan State's secondary is not good, but Michigan State, Cade was coming down to his second, third read, he was facing pressure, and then he just makes some incredible throw. That stood out to me as the best game by a Michigan quarterback in years.
The Michigan State game.
Michigan State game it was.
Wow.
So I that's a very high bar for me for McNamara.
Wow.
And this game was just like this game was a first read quarterback going in there and making the first read that was open and getting the ball there. And I mean that's what you wanted out of him.
I gotta tell you, it's to me, it's a matter of looking back because at this game it was like three or four bad throws. In this game, you look at that Michigan State game, there are a lot of misses in that game, So that's what stands out to me. Can you capitalize on what's there? And it was encouraging to me, even if he wasn't facing as much pressure, he was facing a better secondary, right? I mean, we can say that he was facing a better secondary than the one that he saw at East Lansing. And here this guy in this contest, the majority of the time, I mean, he even had a few drops in there. I mean, I thought that, you know, as far as capitalizing on what's there, I thought it was a good day for him. And I thought it was a really good day for J.J. McCarthy, who, if you had any doubts about, you know, his usage, I thought that this was his best game, too. I'm curious what you think.
Oh, yeah. This game was tailor-made for McCarthy. Just because, like, the stuff was wide open. Remember I told you that third read was going to be open? Like, McCarthy's a guy who's going to get to that third read. He's going to run around until that guy's open. And, I mean, the one he hit to Edwards underneath the wheel route where they just kind of, you know, they vamped that. I mean, that's kind of what McCarthy's going to give you that McNamara is never going to have.
There was that two-play sequence in pretty short order where he broke a couple of tackles, picked up, I think, 14 yards on the ground. And, like, he's done that a couple of times this year where he's not just the guy who's going to slide down after 6 or 7 yards. He's a real option as a runner. And then I think he throws a hitch to Cornelius Johnson, and you can just hear it arrive at Cornelius Johnson. And you're just like, okay.
That's different.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's like the segment of the fan base that's like, we need to play JJ because he has more upside. And you see that argument. I don't think that's practical at this point, obviously. But I understand where that's coming from.
The one thing I'll say from my view was that I felt McNamara did his best job this week at stepping up into the pocket. I felt like he pressed the pocket a lot better than he has in the past. He didn't bail. I think the one time he bailed in this game, it made sense, and he ended up going out to his right and finding an open lane to throw into. But the one thing he really did well was when there was pressure, which wasn't a lot, I'll concede, but when there was pressure, he did step up into the pocket and press the pocket. And so I thought, in that context, this was as good as I've seen him. You know, I thought McCarthy had a great game too, or a good game too, and limited numbers of reps, but I thought he did very well with them. The issue, of course, is not one for this week. It's one for maybe next month, which is what does Michigan do next year? Which is
Let it be next year. There's only one game on the schedule this year.
I think that he showed. We saw signs of his maturation in this game, and the biggest one was the check he made for the touchdown. I mean, you know, there are some who
who feel like, you don't mess with your quarterbacks, especially in a big game like this. I thought one of the reasons Michigan was so effective against Michigan State was because he played in that contest. And I believe the same to be true in this contest as well. I think that he is a more mature quarterback now. Definitely think that he is ready for the moment. And frankly, I wonder what you guys think. I think they're going to need him. I think they're going to need his playmaking ability injected into the equation, much like we saw when they were in East Lansing.
There's a very clear difference in their zone read game when McCarthy's in there versus McNamara, right? McNamara, they don't respect that at all. And you saw that one time McNamara checked into a run, and then the guy comes around from behind and catches him. That's because that guy does not have any fear. And then there's another play later. It's a zone stretch, and they got McCarthy in there. And, like, there's four guys on the left all waiting for McCarthy to keep, and, like, nobody on the right. And Haskins doesn't meet anybody for, like, the first 5 yards. There's all Michigan guys on that side. And that kind of threat in the run game is going to open up so much for those running backs. I still totally think that McNamara is your starter. I just think that, you know, these guys are both on a team. Both of them can help you. And McCarthy gives you some aspects that McNamara doesn't that should be in the offense. And I like that they're using him that way.
Yeah, I think it's huge. He, you know, people, you know, talk about the one bad play against Michigan State where he fumbled out of bounds. But again, I mean, that's how many games ago, you know, he is, I think, that's part of the maturation process for him. Would have liked on his one run in this game to the outside for him to switch the ball to his outside arm like he did in on that fumble out of bounds against Michigan State. One of the reasons why that ball did go out of bounds because he did switch it to his outside arm. But this is a guy that I, you know, playmaking ability, JJ, Donovan Edwards, I think they got to be in the mix for this game against the Buckeyes. I think they will be in the mix for the game against the Buckeyes. So, talking about the Buckeyes, when you watched them do what they did to Michigan State, did you come away thinking they were better than you originally thought? Or did you come away from it saying, oh, well, Michigan State is worse than I originally thought? Which one was it? Or was it both?
I think both. Like, you don't really expect a conference game against a reasonable opponent to be 49-0. So whenever that happens, you got to, like, look at what's going on with both teams. And I think Michigan State has been kind of living on borrowed time in regards to their secondary, and that was the worst possible matchup. They just couldn't even stay anywhere near Ohio State receivers, even when they had good calls on the Ohio State receivers, just beat them one-on-one all day, every day. So, you know, to some extent, I think it was expected. I didn't think that game was going to be tight, but 49-0, I mean, like,
yeah, I was surprised that it was like that in the second quarter. Yeah, I knew they were get blown out, picked as much, but that it happened so fast every single drive. I tell you, my overriding feeling was, how the hell did Michigan lose to these dudes? That was my overriding feeling.
Well, I have several different answers for that.
What did you think of the Michigan State Ohio State game there, Seth?
Oh, man. I mean, State secondary was not going to have a chance against those receivers. You got three, you know, NFL receivers out there, and, you know, they're getting paid like it. They deserve to be out there. So I was more surprised that Michigan State's offense wasn't able to get the ball moving against them at all. Ohio State's linebackers have not been that good this year. They did a really good job of flying to the ball, of anticipating what Michigan State was going to run. They had them scouted really well, and it was like, I don't want Ohio State's defense to be good right now, too. Like, the offense we know about, we knew that's going to be an issue, but I was hoping they would be able to get scored upon, because they changed their entire defensive system this year, and they're just doing it with talent, but it's, you know, they got talent.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt that Ohio State was better than I would guess they would fare in this game. I knew they would score points, but I was surprised at how well they kept the Michigan State running game inert. Now, of course, the kid only got Walker only had six runs and six carries for 24, 25 yards, something like that. And by the time
that was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed to get hurt or he seemed to have some ankle problem. And by the time we were 5 minutes into the game, it was pretty much over. So they just basically pulled him. And I don't think Michigan State was going to be successful just passing the ball against them. You know, my question for you guys is, I think Michigan will be able to move the ball some against Ohio State. I think. But I don't know what we're going to do with that offense because Stroud did not look like the same quarterback I'd seen in the Oregon game or in the early part of the season. He looks like he's come a long way, and that offense has come a long way.
So well, we got to get to a break, and we'll address that on the other side. But how about you not let the guy camp out in the backfield? How about you let him? Right. How about you make him have to move? How about you at least breathe on him? Which Michigan State never did all day long. The guy could have built a house back there. We got to get to a break. Be back on the other side. More MGO Blog Roundtable. We'll get some of your questions coming through on the stream for the guys about this matchup between the Buckeyes and Wolverines come high noon on Saturday here in Ann Arbor. Back with more MGO Blog Roundtable. We'll return here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. All right, so you got a bunch of questions that we'll never get to if we just wait for to come back on radio. So I'll start getting some of them in now. All right, let's pull them up here really quick. So the first one has to do with, what do you think Ohio State's weakness is? Which guy asked that question?
Well, it was Kerry Coombs, but they dealt with that.
Their biggest weakness is their linebackers. They have very simple instructions. The new defense is kind of restructured to make sure that they don't have a lot on their plates. And eventually that kind of thing can come back and bite you. It was the opposite when they faced Oregon. They were fritzing out. They didn't know what they were doing because they had so many instructions. So they've really simplified the defense, and I think it's worked for them. But when you have a simple defense, sometimes it's also easy to exploit.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Ohio State has a weakness, it's on that side of the ball. And I do think that Michigan can pass the ball and run the ball against them. I think it's plausible that can happen. My question is how consistently they'll be able to do it. Michigan will be able to do it. And my question is, you know, what are we going to do against that pass offense in particular? Because it looked very, very potent and polished, albeit against a pretty bad pass defense. So,
yeah, man, they are. I mean, the reality is they're going to put up some yards and points. I think your best defense for that is going to come up front with getting some pressure. C.J. Stroud, I swear, I don't think he got pressured one time the entire game. I mean, if the dude could just stand back there and like it's like they're running routes on air.
They've got incredible offensive line. I mean, that's not just coming out of nowhere. Like Ohio State has a very good offensive line. Both their tackles could have gone to the NFL this year. The other guy that they use should go to the NFL this year. The guards are all five stars. Like they're just a really. I think they have one of the best centers in the country. It's just a great line.
Yeah, it isn't that clear to me that we'll get that much pressure on Stroud. I mean,
if they don't get any pressure, then dude, this.
I mean, if they can grab onto Ojabo and Hutchinson the way that – I mean, Hutchinson's actually strong enough that he can kind of shove guys a bit. I don't know if that's going to work against Ohio State's dudes. But, like, if the Big Ten continues to let that get called the way it's called, it kind of nerfs Michigan's best feature on defense, right? Like, the way that Michigan can compete in this game is they have the best two ends in the country. If you can erase those ends by not calling – the penalty that's out there every single time. Ohio State's really good at doing that, and that could, you know, turn this game into a blowout really fast.
Yeah, yeah. Look, if you said, what are they going to do on the back end? Those are matchups that won't hold up. I mean, I think that you're going to see a heavy amount of zone. He's going to have to play some, man. He's done a good job of mixing his coverages, but this team is a different animal, as we all know. My bigger concern is, you know, their defense over the middle of the field. I just think you talk about Ohio State's linebackers. I think Michigan's linebackers and coverage in the middle of the field have really been taken advantage of. And I think that that is going to be a major area of concern in this contest, in my opinion.
I tend to agree. I think that's probably the weakest link on the Michigan team, right? As the, in my opinion, at least, the linebackers. So
that will have to be. Don't be a swinging gate. What'd you say, Ira?
Back on radio in about 25 seconds.
25 seconds. All right.
25.
I gotcha.
I mean, Michigan's linebackers are asked to do hard things. I don't necessarily think that they are, you know, a super weak part of the defense. I think that they are expected to be doing things with their minds that are, it's just too hard for anyone to do. And Josh Ross is not that player. He's best when he can just kind of look at something and go.
All right, so fellas, we have the MGO Blog Roundtable with us here. Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, Craig Ross. So let's do a game plan meeting here. Michigan is obviously the underdog in this game at home, 2-10-1 teams, with Ohio State coming off a thrashing of Michigan State that really illustrated their superior skill talent, the best collection of skill talent in the country. So if Michigan is to beat this team, if they are to beat this team, what do you think the formula for that will have looked like? So let's start with you. I'll go with you first, Craig. If they win the game, what will the formula have looked like?
Well, first of all, I think the crowd needs to be loud and into it. There's nothing more devastating to an offensive team than getting a couple of illegal procedure calls. And, you know, whether we'll even, who knows, it might be 35% Ohio State fans like I think it was last time. I don't know. But if the crowd is loud and into it early and can impact the game. I also think Ohio State has a tip or a tell in their offense that I'm sure Mike McDonald has seen. And it's more profound when there's a lot of noise, because I've noticed it more on the road than when they're at home. So I think, you know, for Michigan to win this game, they're probably going to need to be plus on turnovers. I think if Michigan's negative on turnovers, the chances of winning this are about zero. I think if we're plus in turnovers, we have a chance. So I don't know. It's a home field. It's a big game. If the crowd gets into it, if Michigan gets ahead a bit, I could see Ohio State panicking and losing this game.
What's their toughest road environment so far? Nebraska?
Nebraska, yeah.
All right.
Nebraska.
We'll see if Michigan fans cannot sell their tickets, right? That's what we talked about last week. Yeah. Yeah. If they win this game, Brian Cook, what would the formula have been?
Well, it looks like Aiden Hutchinson winning the Heisman probably. Like, like if he has like just a monster game where he is not able to be contained and he's either getting sacks himself or forcing Stroud to move around in the pocket, and you couple that with Mike McDonald, you know that sack, I guess I do remember something from the Maryland game, the gray sack where they blitz off the corner, they drop off a couple of guys from the line of scrimmage, and Tagovailoa doesn't know what he's looking at, and then it's too late. Like, the move that Michigan made this offseason was to move away from a lot of cover one, a lot of man-to-man, and make a real effort to confuse the Ohio State quarterback. And so if Mike McDonald has a lot of stuff up his sleeve, now is the time to dump every junk zone that you have. Every bizarre, weird configuration, every disguise that you have possibly come up with in your entire career, this is the time to bring it out, to just give Stroud that moment of indecision and hope that Michigan's defensive ends get home. And they're going to score points. Michigan's going to score some points too. You know, they're going to need some catches from receivers. They're going to need everybody to play out like over their heads. And if they can get Stroud rattled, if they can get him moving off his spot, if they can get him thrown into coverage, then there's a chance.
Seth?
You know, we've talked a lot about Ohio State's receivers. We have not talked enough about Michigan's receivers. And they have a lot of talent in that receiver core that, you know, we've seen glimpses of, or one guy will have a game at any given point. Jahan Dotson, his second best game this season was against Ohio State. His best game was against Maryland because Maryland's defense is terrible. Second best game was against Ohio State. Now, you put in, they got to deal with Henning. They got to deal with Donovan Edwards. They got to deal with Roman Wilson and his speed. They got to deal with Cornelius Johnson and his speed and his route running. They've got to deal with Andrell Anthony and his evident talent. You know, we're Mike Sainra still. Like, there's, even without Ronnie Bell, there are, Daylon Baldwin has had some good plays. I think he has been underrated recently. I mean, there are a lot of guys out there. And Ohio State's secondary is, you know, they're guys. They're not superstars. So, I mean, Michigan has not really flown the ball except for against Michigan State. But this is an opportunity here for, I think, some of these guys to break out. And, I mean, you got to beat Ohio State by playing better than them. And they've got some guys in this team that have the capability of playing better than them. Corum could be back. Haskins is going to do his thing, man. Like, that guy has not let you down all year, right? So, I mean, Michigan is not a bad football team. I think this is the best football team that Ohio State's faced this year. Ohio State's been in some games this year. So, like Brian said, confuse Stroud, get some plays made on your defense, and then the offense just has to be working, man. It's just Michigan, Ohio State. This is what you've been here for. This is what you came here for. These guys are going to be ready to play, and we've got some talent on this team that's going to show.
So a common theme question as you look at the game that they dropped to Oregon, and obviously they've improved significantly since then, but they were just pushed in Columbus, no less, by Penn State. They were just pushed at Nebraska. Is there a common theme to those games that you guys have been able to identify? And is there a common theme from the last couple of times that Michigan has faced Ohio State? They are, obviously, they were blowouts, but they were games at halftime, and the separation seemed to come in that third quarter. Is there a common theme to why that happened in both of those games?
Well, Michigan ran out of steam because they didn't have the talent to keep going offensively once their bag of tricks in the first half was depleted. And Michigan's defense was very predictable, and its responses to what Ohio State was doing was very predictable. So there's this sort of this infamous pass where it's the third quarter against Don Brown, and Don Brown is like, all right, well, we need to do something to jump these crossing routes. And so they jump the crossing routes, and it turns into a circle route. And it's like, well, they anticipated your reaction. So they were just – that happens in games where there's a more talented team and there's a less talented team, and usually the less talented team is able to hang around. They're able to use some chicanery to, like – even out the talent difference, and then usually in the second half things become clear.
And what about this year, Seth, in the games that the one game they lost in the couple of games here recently they were pushed in, their common theme to those?
Yeah, they're linebackers. Penn State, really good at making you, we saw it with our guys, right? Penn State makes linebacker hell. That's what their offense is about. Nebraska, they give you guys moving this way and that way. Scott Frost is wonderful at this, at just like giving you so many different looks. And Ohio State's linebackers, you got to keep it simple for those guys, right? They're Ohio State dudes. They're not like, you know, well-educated gentlemen from a from a college football. They're young guys. They're all new starters, and they try to simplify things for them. Oregon took advantage of the fact that things were too complicated for them and just kind of kept on bumping outside and having the Brandon bump some duo and stuff. The way that you can really attack them is linebacker hell. And I don't know if Michigan's really been good at that. That's not really been their strong suit.
Donovan Edwards,
Blake Corum, if he's available. I mean, you have ways of messing with them. Josh Gattis came in as the speed and space guy. You know, they know how to do some RPOs. They just have not run them very well. So I think that they're going to have some things planned for Ohio State that they've been saving all year as far as that's concerned. And then, those two games, Penn State got away with a ton of holding. I think that, like, the refs kind of kept them in that game a little bit for a while, and then finally they had that the touchdown by the defensive tackle that just kind of broke the whole thing. I don't know. Like, if you can get all – I don't want to make it down to the whistles, but, like, it's gonna matter if Hutchinson and Ojabo are allowed to ply their trade. That's going to be a huge difference because Ohio State's got a great offensive line. I don't think our tackles are going to be generating much pressure against him that way. Mazi's been good against middling competition and not very good against like very good offensive linemen. And this is going to be a new test as far as the offensive line. I think Hutchinson can hang. I think Ojabo is a real threat. And if those guys are allowed to play football, then we've got a shot in this game.
Craig, how you feeling about Michigan's shot before we talk a little basketball? How you feeling about this game heading into it? Some are saying it's over before it starts.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that point of view. I mean, you watch Ohio State this last week, it's easy to feel that we're overmatched. On the other hand, they don't look like they overmatched Michigan in when you look at the Nebraska game or when you look at the Penn State game. I think Michigan's a better team than Nebraska or Penn State. Michigan has a legitimate shot, more than a puncher's chance in this game. And after all, in Ann Arbor, it's always 24-12. And if the fans come out and really are in this game, I think football's an emotional game. It's a game that where there can be synergy between a team and fans. And I don't want to say I'm optimistic, but I think Michigan has a legit shot in this game.
Gotcha. All right, let's switch gears and talk some basketball. Michigan out the gate, Brian. I mean, you look at their schedule. We'll look back and we'll say they started out the season with four tournament teams. So they're definitely getting tested at a time where they're trying to find some things out. They're trying to find themselves. There's a lot of role definition yet to be determined. And they ran up against a buzzsaw with length, athleticism, and talent when they faced Arizona on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, they've probably already faced two of the top 10 shot blockers in the country this year. So that's been difficult for them to adjust to. I mean, the thing that kind of gets me is like how many shots did Hunter Dickinson get up against Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
Like the answer is not nearly enough. He's like your All-American and they're doubling him and you can't make them pay for doubling him. And that's like, I mean, last year you throw it around the horn and whoever's open can take a three. And that's not the case this year because you've got guys who like Johns who they get open looks and they don't want to take them. You got guys like, Jones, who's not really a shooter. I mean, he's decent at it, but clearly he needs a lot of space and time to get his shot off, and it's mediocre at best. And then if Houston's not hitting, which he is not so far, it's just difficult to get correct spacing on your offense and have anything that resembles an environment where a post can actually get something done.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that. The difficulty right now, I mean, I think Hunter had 10 shots in the Arizona game. I didn't think that was enough. On the other hand, it was very difficult for him to get any sort of a good look because Arizona's long and they're talented. Koloko is an NBA player. And so teams are going to do that the rest of the year. You're going to see teams doubling down on him, gambling that Michigan won't be able to hit the three. And I mentioned this earlier in the year and there to some skepticism, but I had seen Caleb Houston play all of his games in the world in Europe in those World Junior games or whatever they were.
Fubo?
Yeah, and while I felt he was a good basketball player and could do a lot of things on the court, the one thing he couldn't do in those sequence of games was shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. And he shot it at about 20% from three in those games. And it wasn't just on 10 shots. It was on a lot of shots. And even though he was the best player, I think on that team, on the Canadian team, even though he was the best player on that team, he was not a good shooter from distance. And you're seeing the same thing now. So I don't know. I don't know what Michigan's response is going to be when you don't have Isaiah Livers, when you don't have Franz Wagner, when you don't have Shondi Brown, and when you don't have Mike Smith. You just got rid of four pretty good shooters, and or better than pretty good. So, you know, I think Juwan and the Michigan coaching staff has some problems here. And I don't know what the answer really is.
Yeah, they're shooting 28% as a team. I mean, no one's going to survive, being able to shoot. If you're shooting 28% as a team and you're getting mostly open looks, like, you're not going to live that way. When they've got to figure out who they are. If you're going to be a super defensive team, right, then, you know, Caleb Houston can't be your three. I think it's fair to say the guy was overrated. I think there were some signs that was going to be true ahead of time, because he was being rated as if he was a three at that size, and he's not. He's just, I mean, he doesn't have the feet for it. He doesn't have the shooting for it. As a four, you're like, oh, that guy can drive, at his size. That's cool. That guy can actually see the court. He made a couple cool passes in this game. And
he's a good passer.
And a good passer. And against bigs, I mean, he's got plenty of size to handle most fours. So, I mean, he can be part of your answer at the four. I think Diabate gives you some answers defensively, even though it doesn't really help your offense that much. But he's a good passer, too. So the problem is you just don't have much shooting on the team. That's just going to be the problem, I think, this year. Brooks has been pretty good. I mean, Jones will come around. He's just got to get rid of that. He takes so many penalties, right? He thinks he's got to go and steal the ball and generate possessions, and you can't do that at the level of competition that Michigan's facing. And he's constantly in foul trouble, which means you're out without your point guard, which means you're trying to have Eli run the point or trying to have Kobe Bufkin do it. And like, they don't know who they are yet. They haven't figured out who their lineup is yet. And I don't think their lineup is the one they're starting with right now.
And neither do I, but I think Brian, you hit the nail on the head. You run your offense through Hunter Dickinson while you figure everything else out. And that might be the answer all season, but it's certainly the answer right now. And that's not just a Hunter getting up shots thing. Hunter Dickinson is a good passer, really sees the floor well. You can run your offense through him and have him quarterback things from the post at times. I think that's one of the answers. You're going to get better looks for your shooters as they try to find their way. We've seen him. I mean, we saw him with a nice bounce pass on a back door. We saw him find I think it was the UNLV game, Brandon Johns on a basket cut. He can be a facilitator in the post. He just needs more. He needs more touches, especially while you try to figure out what everyone else's role is, while you try to get Devontae Jones acclimated. Because I do think that a huge part of this, it just feels like the speed of the game, the athleticism that he's faced night after the aggression that comes with you being a top five team. That's Michigan. I mean, guys have been all over him. They need to screen for him more, even in the backcourt. But it's going to take some time, clearly, for him to get acclimated. While that is taking place, ride Hunter, man. Ride Hunter more than they have. I think you're right on money there with that, Brian.
Well, I'd like to see them go back to more of those high-low looks that they were using in the tournament with Johns and Diabate, right? Because you've got two bigs on the floor at the same time, and you had a really effective way to use them, and we haven't really seen much of that. And the other thing I think Hunter needs to do is, like, you know what? If he's standing outside the three-point line and no one's checking him, he needs to shoot that ball. Like, he needs to establish himself as a three-point shooter, and if he's able to drag a big out of the paint when he's on the perimeter and Musa Diabate is on the floor, that's a whole different world. So I don't know what he's shooting in practice. I don't know if that's a feasible thing, but, like, we saw those off-season shooting videos, and, like, he needs to be aggressive with his shot if it's at all in a range where you got to check the guy.
Is it too soon, Craig Ross, to be talking about Musa Diabate in the starting lineup, you think?
Boy, that's a good question. I mean, at times when they've had the two bigs in, they've looked okay. At times they haven't looked okay. I mean, the point is what Juwan and the staff feel like this team needs to be. Are we a defensive team? And we're just going to play defense hard and pound it into Hunter and try and high low. Then maybe the answer is yeah. But I'm not convinced I'm not convinced that works best yet. And I don't think the coaches have decided that yet either. They seem to be I don't want to say confused, but they seemed unconvinced about any particular organization or structure of players. It doesn't look like, I thought at first they had figured out who their top eight were. Well, I'm not sure they really have. I don't know if the coaches have figured out exactly, you know, what this team should look like, you know, but my concern, you know, basketball is a game in the end where the coach's role is to figure out how you get good shots. After that, there's not much they can do. And I'm not sure this team is gonna really shoot it well enough. I don't think they're a top five team. Maybe they'll get there, but I'm skeptical. I think this is a team that might be scrambling to make the tournament.
Mm. Mm. Wow, that has turned really, really quickly.
I think you're going too far, man. I think that Michigan, the way that you look at this roster and the way you want to, like, the roster you'd want to attack Michigan would be a tall wing who can drive and take advantage of Houston, and some shot blockers who are going to prevent you from getting into the lane and prevent you from getting the ball to Dickinson. And we faced two of those teams that are constructed exactly that way already in Seton Hall in Arizona. I mean, both those teams are the perfect teams that you would want to use to face the way that Michigan's constructed right now. If you want to use Diabate in the starting lineup, go for it. You can't have Houston out there at the same time. It's pointless to have a defensive nightmare paired with a guy that, you know, they can take off the dribble, because it's just going to unbalance your defense every time, and then you're always racing to get back again. So I think that...
Well, I don't agree with that, because if you have Diabate out there, guess who can check the three? Diabate.
Yeah, it's just...
And then Houston A was able to check a guy at the four that he's probably much more capable of dealing with.
Sure.
So, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with Diabate guarding down and guarding a smaller player and Houston guarding up. I mean, that's what Beeline did with Duncan Robinson at some point, and it worked out, and I don't see any reason why that can't work here.
All right, so we got to call. We got to call it, fellas, as we are over time. But you have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. Appreciate you accommodating us by coming on Tuesday, and hopefully when we reconvene, we'll be talking about a Michigan victory. We can hope, right? We can hope. All right, so fellas,
24-12.
We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow.